Hey, BA fam, this episode is sponsored by State Farm. Are you a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Hey. For those of you who are asking for the visual, with each hey, my hands get progressively higher and I end in jazz hands and scene. I am super excited because we got my girl on today, aside from Mandy, which is my girl. But, you know, y'all are used to Mandy. We've got a guest that you guys have loved. She was here 2 years ago when we first started, and she's gracing us today. Welcome, Patrice Washington.
Hey, thank you for having me back. And I'm doing a little jazz hands over here as well in your honor. Yes.
I can hear it. I can hear the jazz hands in your voice.
It's so good to have you back on the show.
I know. I can't believe it's been 2 years already. So congratulations to you guys.
We're in our terrible twos.
Doing your thing. You're in your terrible twos. You'll get past it.
So for those of you, first of all, at this point, if you're listening and you want to know who Patrice is, you have to go back to one of our early episodes when we first talked to Patrice, aka America's Money Maven. Go listen to that show, then come back because we're about to catch up with Patrice. And I want to hear everything about where have you been these past 2 years? Where have you been? Where are you going? Where is your business? Are you still on the Steve Harvey show? What's happening? What's happening in the Patrice universe?
Oh my gosh. So where have I been? It's been about 2 years. And it's funny, about 2 years ago, I was actually in the kitchen with my daughter. I had just come off a book tour and I was in the kitchen with my daughter, pretending to cook because y'all know I'm not a real cook, but I was trying to do a little something, something. And my daughter was trying to tell me this story, Mandy, and she called me my nanny's name like three times in a row. Ooh. And I was like, why does she keep calling me Miss Angela? You know, and here's the deal. Have any kids or ever seen any kids, met a kid, you ask a little kid a real question, they're going to give you a real answer. Mm-hmm. And I asked her, like, why do you keep calling me Miss Angela? And essentially, she kept it all the way real. She's like, because I talk to her all the time. Aww. And that really hurt.
How old was
that
she?
Was like, she was about six. Okay. She was just about to turn seven. And it was one of those aha moments where you're like, wait a minute, as much as I enjoy being America's Money Maven and doing my thing on the Steve Harvey show and speaking all over the country and interview after interview, as much as I enjoy all of that, like my number one responsibility is to be this child's mother. You know, I asked to have her. She didn't ask for me. And so it's to be her mother. And it was a reminder that I never wanted to be a public success and a private failure. And in that moment, I started to really strategize and think about how I could take a few steps back. So I know for a lot of people, it doesn't seem like I've disappeared because I've been all over the place, still doing a lot, but I've been so much more intentional and strategic about my family time and how that really connects to this pursuit of me being America's Money Maven and living in my purpose and doing all this work I really love. But I was struggling. Honestly, I was losing focus at that time and thinking that if I just kept going and going and going, which I know a lot of people can relate to, that, you know, we're kind of chasing that next shiny object. But in that moment, I realized that wasn't it. So for the last 2 years, I've really been pulling back a little bit. And it's funny because, you know, I talk about this all the time and people are like, man, so you worked that hard and you just gave up all your money? Actually, no, that's not what happened. I started to go on the road less, but I leveraged the fewer opportunities that I was taking, and I actually made more money.
Hallelujah.
Since I haven't been doing the same amount of work.
Tiffany, this is what you needed. This is what you were talking about the last episode.
Me and Patrice, we talk on the side.
So okay.
So I'm trying to hold back the tears and the shaking and the church paint. So because it is exactly what I have been wanting. Like Mandy and I, you know, we talk candidly on the show with our listeners. And, you know, it's just because you love it, you know, and you can't deny it. Like, but at the same time, I'm like, oh, I'm a new wife. I'm a bonus mom. And I'm making the transition into not always working has been really hard because it's not like I dislike the work. But at the same time, I don't want to look up and, my husband and my bonus baby and the baby that I want to have, nobody knows me, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was struggling with that transition of how do I pull back. So that's why I can't, this conversation we're going to have today of redefining wealth, if I can say that. Awesome.
So what are some of the things you did, Patrice, to leverage? So you're scaling back in some ways, and you said just focusing on the opportunities that really have value for you, I'm assuming financially, but then also just fulfillment-wise. I mean, what are some what are some of the steps you really took to recalibrate how you were approaching your business?
Well, one of the first things I had to do was get clarity around who I really was. Like for me, not being on the road so much literally gave me time to not be so obligated to delivering other people's sound bites, you know, because I was getting invited to do a lot of interviews and television and radio. And so you have to speak in these, you know, very concise sound bites, but I was being requested for the same topics, right, over and over and over again. And so when I had some time to sit back, I was like, this isn't even you anymore. No, like that doesn't even make you happy. You are not pumped up and super jazzed about talking about budgets anymore or talking about credit reports or talk like that just doesn't make you happy anymore. And so that was one of the first ways I started to evaluate what I would do and what I wouldn't was by getting really clear about what did fulfill me, what piece of this whole, because there's so much, we all have our part, right? Like I met you guys at a personal finance, you know, conference at FinCon and stuff. And we all offer our own little secret sauce to this whole, you know, environment of personal finance. And I was like, there are people out there who will cover that. What feels right for you? Like what really speaks to your heart, speaks to your soul, speaks to your journey. And once I got really clear on that, it became easier to just cross things off the list. Because we would talk to people, you know, when people would pitch me on coming to things or being a part of things, we would say, okay, well, Patrice would like to steer the conversation this way. Are you okay with that? And some people would be like, no, we need your 1, 2, 3 bullet points on this very specific topic. And I'm like, nah, it's okay. Like, I'm not going to leave my kid to go be disgruntled somewhere. Like, for what? I could be disgruntled at the PTA meeting. Like, no, I'm okay. You know, I don't have to leave my house to go and do that. I'm not. You know, that's what we work for, Tiffany, right? Like you work to build something that gives you freedom, but we turn around and become a slave to it.
Yes. Well, child, you are a preacher to the choir.
Yeah, you know, and I was like, man, I'm a slave to these sound bites. I don't want to live like this. I truly want to talk about what God puts on my heart. And so the first thing was like really getting clarity around what that was, because I knew it was something. But I'm gonna keep it real. Like at first, I couldn't tell what it was that was just kind of vexing my spirit. You ever just been like an uneasiness, and you know that like you got to shift, but you don't know to where or to what or how. You just feel something is like not right. So that's what it was. So taking a step back and getting clarity was a really really big one. And then putting people in place around me on my team to help hold me accountable to that, because that's the other thing, you know, we become a slave to it. And it's like people dangle dollars in front of you. Like, I mean, I guess I could come back in one day, you know, if I make it a quick trip, if I do this, you know, you try to rationalize, or as I like to say, ration out lies to yourself. So I would try to rationalize. And so I hired one of my good friends to support me. And I got some really great team members in place who helped me set up systems so that I wouldn't even hear about some of the opportunities that were just not a fit. Like, they would go through the process, take in the form, make the call, talk to people, you know, do their research. And then if they determined, based on what we talked about being a fit versus a non-fit, if they determined that it wasn't a fit, no one would ever tell me.
Okay.
And that was the best, because it didn't even bog me down. You know, like, I wouldn't even think about things, because again, I would try to justify things like, oh, I remember they hired me to do such and such back in 2010. Like, I would be doing all these little justifications. And once the team got in place and we put systems and kind of rules in place, man, that freed up so much. It was awesome. And then I wasn't everywhere, so I could leverage that and charge more, essentially.
Yeah, both of you guys have, like, I mean, a big part of your business is speaking engagements, right? I mean, that's a lucrative part of your business. I don't know what portion of it is. I'm not really asking, but I feel like that is, how can you turn down those big juicy opportunities? I mean, and part of, like, the entrepreneurial reality is, like, you know, you have an opportunity in front of you, and that idea of that scarcity mindset, like, oh my, if I turn this down, will there be another one? Will there be another one? How have you dealt with that?
I totally can identify with that. I went through the fear, you know, I went through FOMO, fear of missing out. Oh my gosh, what's going to happen? Look at all the people that are going to be there. Maybe I should be there. Maybe I should be networking. But one of the things, when I knew about different things we were turning down, I've been really intentional about taking those same days or weekends and deliberately spending time with my family, or doing something that really made me feel like, oh, you know what? I didn't miss anything, because this is where it was at. Like, this, putting makeup on with my daughter, letting her tell me, I want, mommy, I want you to beat my face.
Oh, no.
I love that.
And we had a little music, makeup, and mimosas with apple cider, of course. but us having that moment and just spending that type of time, honestly, it fulfilled me in such a way, like, it makes me so happy that it also provided, like, the peace of mind and clarity to go create what did fit, you know? So a lot of things have happened over these last couple years. Like, this past year, I launched a whole new website at patricewashington.com, and I really put time into thinking about what are the things that have truly helped me rebuild. So when you guys go back and listen to my first episode, I'm sure you'll hear my story about going from, you know, a seven-figure business I built out of college to losing it all in the recession, scraping up change, living on my brother's couch in 2009, to rebuilding everything and becoming America's money maven. And one of the things I got clear on during that time is that I really felt like I was starting to do people a disservice by not telling them my full story. You know, it's like, how do you go from your brother's couch to now you're sitting on this couch across from Steve Harvey on his talk show every month? Like, like, little something happened in between. You think, like, maybe there's some things that we could talk about. And because I only ever had time to talk in sound bites, right? Like, I never could really get into it the way that I wanted to. And so over the last, like, year and a half, it was really, like, just heavy on me. Like, you need to create something so you can tell your own story, so that you can share the things that you've done that have helped you. Like, at what other place would I be able to talk about, you know, music, makeup, and mimosas with my daughter / apple cider with my daughter? Like, where else could I really talk about that? Not on the Steve Harvey show. I mean, shout out to Steve. I love him, but not there. They don't want to hear that. I'm the money maven. So I got to only talk about money, and that's it. But I really believe, and have believed for a long time, as I'm sure I said in that interview before, that building wealth has 100% nothing to do with money. It has 100% everything to do with us and our mindsets towards money. And I believe that your mindset really dictates what your habits are. And there were some really, you know, deliberate and specific habits that I've developed over the last several years, but I wasn't comfortable getting out of that box at first. Like I said, that fear of, like, oh, this is what they brought me here to do. I wasn't comfortable getting out of the box. And so, like, the last year and a half, I've been like, F it, I'm out the box. Like, I got to get out the box, like, by any means necessary. And that's where, like, my whole tagline, chase purpose, not money. I don't only say that to encourage other people. That's a reminder to myself. like every day that I got to do things that fit who I am now, not who the money maven was in 2010.
No, I love that. So what would you say? Because I know you have your podcast and the is it called Redefining Wealth?
Yeah, it's called the Redefining Wealth Podcast. Yep.
So if you were to define wealth personally for yourself, so, you know, many people would be like, wealth is having, you know, $1 million in the bank or whatever. What is your personal definition of wealth for you?
My personal definition of wealth is the freedom to do what I want, when I want, with people I want to do it with.
Mm.
It's literally just freedom. And that was the thing, Tiff. Like, I looked up long ago, but it's funny. Like, I looked it up a long time ago. I would say maybe like 2008 or 9. This is around the time that I had lost everything. And I looked up, for some reason, I was probably blogging or writing an article, but the definition of wealth. And so when you look at it, the first few definitions are all about material possessions and money and assets. And it's all the stuff that we think of. And if you're a millennial who's connected on social media, you think wealth is yachts and like luxury travel and cars or shoes or whatever you think it is. But when you dig really deep, if you look at most online dictionaries for sure, you'll see like 7th, 8th definition all the way down. It says on a lot of them, the 12th century definition of wealth means well-being.
Mm.
Like the true, like W-E-A-L, well, is well-being, and T-H, the condition. So back in the day, way back in the day, people considered wealth more like happiness. And it's so funny how we have totally gone, you know, to the extreme on the other side of wealth is just stuff. But I think we all know for ourselves, or know people who will tell us for sure, that stuff doesn't make you happy.
Yeah.
So those are not mutually exclusive. You know, like that does not have to work hand in hand. And when I really thought about during this kind of mini sabbatical I've had, when I really thought about it and thought about my life from 2007, when the recession began for me and I started to kind of spiral down, by 2009, I was on that couch. And when I thought about the things that I was doing every day, it really had to do with like all these other areas of my life. Yes, I was focused on my finances, but there's only so much you can do every day on your finances. Like there's 24 hours in the day. Like you can't sit and look at your budget all day, or you can't like run your credit over and over again, or sit and watch your stocks or whatever. Like all day, there's other habits that you got to have in place. And I just picked up, some through research, some through coaching, some through mentorship, and some that just happened intuitively, because, you know, like I said, I was pretty successful before all the recession and all that. I just started looking at the different areas of my life that I really felt like had contributed to my wealth, contributed to me being where I am today. And money was definitely one. My work was one. But there were other areas that I feel like just as much contributed. And that's what I wanted to share with other people. Like maybe if you feel like you've been stuck and you've been trying to do all the right things with your money and you're still not getting ahead, maybe you got to consider looking at some other areas of your life to help you get unstuck and get you closer to what you say you want.
Mm.
What do you think it is that holds people back? Like we get questions about that. I actually just listened to a whole podcast about the idea of being stuck. Like someone who's stuck and maybe doesn't have the resources or doesn't think they have the resources to get out of a certain situation or to leave the job they're unhappy with. I mean, what would you say to people in those situations who aren't starting from a place where they are their own boss, you know, like some entrepreneurs are?
Well, one of the things that helped me get unstuck during that period in particular, when I did lose everything, because, you know, I, like I said, I went from a 7-figure business to scraping up change, you know, so that comes with all of the fear of, you know, people finding out, the guilt, the embarrassment, the shame, the how did I do this? Like, what is wrong with me? And so for a period there, it was a short period, but it was a period nonetheless where I just felt like a failure. And it was like, you've lost it. I was like 26 years old and it felt like your life is over. You're done. Like you're a wrap, you know? And in Redefining Wealth, one of the first pillars is called FIT. And FIT is about becoming your best self. And so a lot of people tend to furrow their brows sometimes when they hear me talk about fit, because they think I'm automatically talking about physical fitness, which is one component. But the other thing I had to get really clear on was my mental fitness. And when you have been through different things or failures or setbacks, and you have been so beat up by life, you know, your mind can go to some dark places. Not sure if anyone's ever been there, you know, out of you guys, but your mind can go to some dark places. And one of the things that I really needed to work through was just giving myself permission, mentally, first and foremost, to accept that I was in a bad spot. Like, I had lost all my money, but my mind was not bad. You know, like this was literally an event. This is not you. And to get unstuck, some things that I did do was use like community resources for therapy when I lived in Atlanta, because I needed to talk to somebody. Like, my family wasn't getting it. I'm not gonna lie. And I'm a big believer and a spiritual person and stuff, but folks telling me to pray about it wasn't helping either. Like, it just wasn't getting me over the hump. I would pray about it, feel like, okay, I left it on the altar or whatever. And then like a couple hours later, I'd be like, you know, like, what happened to my life? How did I get here? Especially when I was coming home, the notices on the door and all kind of stuff. Like, so going to therapy really helped me separate who I was from what had happened.
Okay.
And not make those all one thing. And once I was able to take like a step back, or even like a bird's eye view, and kind of hover over, this is the situation that's going on, like, look down on that and try to, you know, move the pieces around best you can. But when you're in it, you can't see it. Yeah. Like, when I was in it, I had done everything that I could do. So I really felt like I had no other alternatives. Like, I was exhausted and just sick and tired of being sick and tired at that time. And so one of the things I always share with people is, if you really feel stuck, faith is one way to kind of help you move on or get out of that. But becoming mentally fit and talking to someone, talking to a professional. Like, I tell people, what if your success is on the other side of you, like, sitting on somebody's couch and just saying, like, you know what? I don't know what I don't know, but I know this isn't right and I need something. And so therapy was a big, big help for me. Still is to this day.
So I met with my accountant today. I was finally paying my quarter three taxes. I'm all late, but whatever, they're paid. and I was asking him, because sometimes, you know, there's so many numbers. And I said, okay, yeah. So, you know, how much did I make for the year? And he was sharing. And I was like, okay, how come I'm not? And I told him, I was like, how come? And I'm frugal by nature, just because I guess I grew up frugal. But I was like, dang, you know, this is like what, you know, I'm sure, you know, doctors make, right? Like a all paid doctor. And he was like, yeah, if not more. I said, well, how come I'm not living in one of those big houses? I mean, I did just buy a house, but those big houses on the hill. And he was like, can I let you in on a little secret? Because he does a lot of taxes. He was like, many of those doctors that live on the hill are broke.
Yeah, they can't afford it.
Yeah. So why do you think we do that? So what pillar kind of addresses that of your redefining wealth? Why is it that someone who's making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year puts themselves in a position that to not be able to really afford their life? Why do we do that?
You know what? It's funny you ask which pillar, because it's really all of them. Okay. Like, my big thing with redefining wealth, a part of my big thing, one is living your life's purpose, but the other is finding fulfillment. And a lot of people make those decisions because they're trying to fill a void, right? So if you are trying to fill the void of maybe some relationships that didn't work out, but it could be with parents, or family, friends, whatever, and you're on this constant chase to prove yourself, then you make those types of decisions. You don't know that that's why you're doing it. You're not aware of it until you go back and maybe do some work and look at that first pillar with the mental fitness piece. But a lot of people just, they aren't even aware that they're doing it. Like, that's why I talked about rationalizing and rationing out lies. Like, we tell ourselves so many lies and we don't consider them to be lies, but we create these stories in our mind and then we justify them. And we can justify them till the cows come home. But at the end of the day, like right is right, as my granny used to say, and wrong is wrong. If it's wrong, it's wrong. And if your accountant tells you it's wrong, it's probably definitely wrong. But all of these areas for me, these pillars, like I really believe when people are, just because you're a doctor, that doesn't mean you love it.
Mm.
Just because you're a lawyer, that doesn't mean you love it. As a matter of fact, most of my friends who are lawyers kind of hate it in some form or fashion. They're always complaining about it, even though they make great money. And so the work piece, which is about living out your life's purpose, I speak to the fact that there are a lot of us who make career choices in particular because we were advised to. Because I know, Tiff, you're Nigerian, I'm Belizean, you know, they can be very persuasive parents who try to, you know, you got about three or four options
yes.
to work from. You know, I didn't go down that path. So my dad was very disappointed that I wasn't an attorney, a doctor, a pharmacist or whatever.
Yes, those are the three right there. That's it.
Those are the big three. You know, so when you are not, I really believe that when people are not living in their purpose, it is really easy for them to not be able to set priorities. Because you're trying to fill the void. So if what you're doing day in and day out does not really just fill you with joy, you know, and just truly make you feel like, man, this is what I'm here for. This is what I was called to do. Then you do stuff like, well, at least I got to have a house that I love that shows that like I made it, you know, or at least I have to drive nice, or at least I have to wear the best clothes. So we start to rationalize, and it happens every day. And many of us do it in different ways. Just some of us do it to our own detriment. I think everyone has a little something in them, but some of us just go way too far. But I don't believe you can recondition what you haven't recognized. And that's where we have to start, is by doing the work to recognize what are those things that kind of set us off.
I feel like it's almost the curse of the word supposed. Like, I'm supposed to fill in the blank. I'm supposed to have a house. Mm-hmm. I'm supposed to have a kid. I'm supposed to have the car. I'm supposed to. But sometimes I want to shake people and be like, who told you you're supposed to? And I think part of it is like you internalize. I think you grow up, like, you don't realize it until you're older, but you maybe internalize the ambitions of your parents or like what they think is right. And of course, social media, you can obviously see, you can just see everyone living their life and immediately compare yourself to it. And it'll feel like you're supposed to be doing, you know, yes. ... And I mm-hmm. I find myself now in my 30s really pushing against that, the notions that seem like I'm supposed to be doing this, and wondering like, why am I supposed to? Why am I supposed to be buying a house right now?
Right.
Just because I have money.
I had a talk with some girlfriends just this past weekend, and we were doing the cousin of supposed to. It was the shoulds.
Mm-hmm. The shoulds, yeah.
It was like, we were all like, you know what? Every time, and that, especially with taking on events or going to speaking engagements or those types of things, I said, every time I get asked to do something and it's not like a hell yeah, if it's remotely a, well, I guess I should, I stop myself. Mm. Like, and that has been a very conscious choice, but I realized that I was very into, I mean, I guess I should do it because, and then searching for the ... Like, oh, it might be great networking. Oh, so-and-so is going to be there. Oh, well, maybe I can. And don't you know, like most of the time that stuff never pans out. Like, very rarely. It's like really the things that I go to where I have no expectation is where all like the juicy, great stuff happens. Like the person I meet in the bathroom, you know, sitting on the random couch in the ladies' room, or the person I meet in the hallway
nice
that I didn't think about. The person I meet about, like I meet in the hallway, or it's some random occurrence that I really couldn't have planned for anyway, but the shoulds are not always what even pans out to be anything worthy, you know? And like, every time I say I should, if that even comes up, then I have to examine that before I move forward.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I'm just like, it's scary though I've been through so many transitions where, and typically as soon as you transition, you drop. Right. And that drop is what people are afraid of. So, you know, when I transitioned from I don't want to do one-on-ones anymore, all of a sudden I took a drop in income for the first few months. And I was like, why did I do this? And then rebounded when I was like, you know what? I like doing these in-person classes. And then when I said, I don't want to do in-person classes anymore, the drop happened. And I know that I'm ready to transition. And even though I'm like, Tiffany, you're going to be fine. It is scary to say, but that drop, am I going to be okay? Is this the time that I'm not going to recover from that drop? I think that's what people are afraid of most. Like, I know that I want to take a step back, and I don't even know what that looks like in some ways. In so many ways I have, and then I filled it with other things. So I'm like, ooh, you know what I want to do? These new things. I'm so busy today. Honestly, though, I had a terrible day. And I was like, and normally, like, I'm really upbeat and happy-go-lucky, and I don't notice how much I have going on. But when you have a terrible day, you start to realize. And I was like, ooh, throw everything away. Everybody. Nobody. I'm going back to teaching preschool. Where are the babies?
I felt like that not too long ago. I posted that in one of the groups that we're in. I was like, have you ever just been like, forget it. I'm going to start from scratch. I want a whole new name. Yeah. I might need a husband. A different husband who could give me a different last name. I'm throwing everything out. Yeah. Like, I think that is such a natural part of entrepreneurship. Like, if you don't want to stop everything that you're doing at least once or twice a year, I don't know. Like, I don't know what you're doing. Because you have to have that level of crazy, I think. But that's the thing that makes you just, like, also keep pushing in an odd way. Because, like, I'll have a day like that. And then the next day I'm like, devil. You know, I feel like this comeback, like this resurgence of power. Like, absolutely not. That will not happen to me today. And then I get like 97 things done in one day that totally made up for the three that I fumbled on the day before. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know, but I totally get you.
Hey, BA fam, this episode is sponsored by State Farm. Are you a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
And what are some ways, let's talk about the business. I like to talk about the money, honey, but like with your businesses, I mean, you're both in sort of similar businesses, I guess, but what are, can you talk about like real talk about the different income streams that you have from your business and how you sort of diversify that? I know that's a big component of like being an entrepreneur today is not just having one, like all your income coming from one source. The same way you don't want to like put all of your money in one savings account forever. You want to diversify.
Yeah. So there's a couple different things, although I'm in transition mode, right? So I used to have all these products and smaller programs, and I would offer them to churches and nonprofits, and they would really pay me. So a lot of what I do, I don't necessarily charge like an individual. I've always been kind of more inclined to really just, I mean, similar to Tiffany, I would say, like nurture people, nurture the audience, but then charge the brands, right? Mm-hmm. Or charge whoever that would bring me out. So speaking is a big component of my income. Also being a spokesperson or a brand ambassador over the last few years has become a great portion of income. And I actually look forward to doing those because I can work with fewer brands that I really like, but I just charge them more. And so I don't have to do a million smaller things, which goes back to the family piece I was talking about in the beginning. And then some of those partners, they pay for my radio segment. I still am on the Steve Harvey morning show. I still have a weekly segment, about 2 to 3 million listeners, 54 cities. And I've been on there now every week for about 3.5 years. Wow. So there's some back-end stuff that I get through my partnership with iHeartRadio, which is actually who helped me launch the podcast. They really wanted to help me deepen the conversation, but also use that as a tool to promote to their sponsors. And the thing I think I'm getting most excited about, I haven't done it in a long time, though, is like group coaching. Like, I, like, you know, like you said, Tiffany, you go in and out. So I'm in that dip right now because I totally shut off my one-on-one coaching because it just didn't fit anymore. Like, I was like, I mean, I could, I should, but I don't want to. Like, I really want to walk women, especially high achieving women, through what these pillars really mean, you know, for redefining wealth, like the areas that we can really work in our lives, especially if we know that we have a full life, but something deep down inside is still unfulfilled. Because I think if there is that unfulfillment, eventually it's going to lead to financial mismanagement in some form or fashion. So I feel like my path to helping people get to their wealth is making sure that there's well-being in all the other areas of their lives. And then we can talk about how to manage, you know, the money that you do have wisely. But I feel like if we don't address some of these other areas, you'll always be a hot mess. So
yeah. Don't you feel like sometimes people focus on like the bottom line? Like they're like, okay, as soon as I finish law school, then I'll have a social life. As soon as I get that promotion, then I'll focus on, you know, that mole that I have on my left shoulders, you know, maybe not that serious.
Dude, that is no way to live. That is no way to live. And that's what, like, I did this group coaching with Steve Harvey's group, Act Like a Success. That's kind of where I piloted this. And the results have been so phenomenal, so moving. But one of the things that hit me recently was one of the participants sent me a message and said, you know, in the fit pillar, the first pillar, I basically shared with the ladies, I said, you know what? If you have a vision for your life, you have a duty and a responsibility to protect the vessel that's needed to execute the vision. Like, we cannot go and go and go and hustle and grind and then neglect the only body we have, right? Like, you only get one. Like, you can't neglect this body, put garbage in it, and expect to get, like, great results out. Like, you can't. And one of the things that I said is, in the next 7 days, for any of you who are ignoring any slight pain, any discomfort, anything that you've questioned, like, and it's been going on for weeks or months or years, and you've been putting it off, I want you to figure out who the specialist, who the doctor is you need to go to, and make an appointment within the next 7 days, right? I think about 60 or 70% of the people actually did it. And one woman ended up sending me a message and sharing that she found a lump on her breast. And that they were catching it just in time.
Wow.
And that was like, I'm sitting here reading this freaking direct message and I'm like, wow. Like, so what good would it be for you to be, and she had a great job, all this stuff, but what good is it for you to make $150,000, $200,000 a year and you ain't even here? And the next day you're not here because you haven't taken care of yourself. Like, what good is that?
You know, I always think of like Steve Jobs, like this man who shifted, like no one's life is the same. And he's not here. No matter how much money that this billionaire man had, he is not here. And I always think that like you can't wealth your way to health necessarily. You know, of course, there are some things like, you know, there's medicine and doctors. But ultimately, if you don't take the time to take care of yourself, and not to say that I'm not here to judge whether he did or didn't, but it just goes to show that there's no substitute for health, no amount of money that can guarantee, you know, your life here. Wow. That's just really
And crazy. That's why I say that pillar is not about being skinny. So when people see fit, you know, they're like, oh, you want me to just go to the gym? You're talking about being skinny. That's easy for you. First of all, I have been thin relatively my entire life. I've also had high blood pressure. I've also had issues with like acidic acid in my stomach and like a gap in my esophagus that was causing all kind of issues and all kind of stuff. Like being thin doesn't matter. That doesn't make you healthy. And at the end of the day, even if I say that what I'm doing is to leave a legacy for my daughter, wouldn't it be nicer for me to just live a little longer so I could also be here for her?
Yes.
Like, I'm not working to make money to just make sure she goes to school debt-free. Like, I'd like to be at the graduation. That'd be nice. And so those were some of the things over these several years where I started to take more control of my health. I stopped with all that, oh, I'm young. Girl, bye. I mean, I'm young. I ain't old, but I'm not 20.
Ooh, don't it get real in your 30s, though? I was just talking to my best friend. I said, I don't remember all of this in my 20s. She said, child, it is really your 30s.
Listen, I was boxing yesterday, and I still feel it in my lower back. All this little turn your body quick and all this. I'm like, sir, you're 20-something, little coach. Like, hold on now. But yeah, it's not just about that. It's like an overall, overarching thing.
Now, real quick, you're married, right?
I am. 10 years in December.
Congratulations.
Ciao.
A decade.
All of it.
I mean, I'm trying to make it 6 months.
We're newly married. Yeah, Mandy and I.
I know. Congrats to both of you. I know I liked your little pictures and stuff on Facebook. I was lurking and, so happy for both of you. Welcome to the fold.
Well, you are a veteran, but I was going to ask if you wanted to talk about how you and your husband, you know, is he part of this strategy, you know, that not strategy, but you know, when you took a step back from your, whatever you were doing in your business and wanted to transition, I mean, how do you guys talk to each other about that? And where is he incorporated and supporting and vice versa?
Oh,
obviously.
Yeah. So the second pillar actually for redefining wealth is people. And people is all about creating relationships that matter. And one of the things after my daughter got me all the way together in the kitchen that one Sunday, I talked to my husband about it. And he was like, I mean, well, yeah. I'm like, what do you mean? Yeah. You know, I first told him, like, can you believe? And he was like, yeah, totally believe it. I was like, you know, when you were looking for a little camaraderie and thought someone would have your back, and he gave me none of that because he's a real friend. So my husband and I ended up having a great conversation too. And that really began the beginning of us like really being more intentional about not having our phone out during dinner. And when someone's talking to you, you look up from the phone. Like, you don't keep looking at the phone like, I hear you, go ahead. Meanwhile, you're like laser focused on your text message or your email or whatever. We had to work through some things that we could do. One, to really, I think, rebuild and continue to build intimacy in our marriage, but also to be a better example for our daughter. And one of the greatest things that you can give your spouse is just your time and attention. And it's really easy. You know, when I was sleeping on the couch, my husband was too. You know, he took a job at Taco Bell and was working at Taco Bell, having people throw open face tacos through the drive through in his face. Like, he went through it during that time. And so while I've been building this brand, he's been rebuilding himself. And now he again has a 7-figure business as well. And one of the things that we attribute that to is not just, you know, getting clear about what we wanted to do and chasing our passions and all that stuff. It's also the support that we've given each other and the time and attention we put in. Like, we're very deliberate about date night. There was a time around the same time that my daughter got with me, real tough in the kitchen. You know, we were doing deliberate date nights every week for years, even when we were broke. When we were in New Orleans broke and we had like a raggedy pickup truck, we would go to a beignet shop, a Cafe du Monde near us in New Orleans, and, you know, pay like $3. Ooh, get us some. Ooh, I'm just thinking about it right now. Get us some beignets.
I heard it.
Beignets. Did you hear it?
I heard it.
Ooh, child. Ooh, wait, hold on. Take your napkin.
Let me get myself together. Yeah, we get like hot chocolate and share it, and we would put the back down on that pickup truck and just sit back there. We're talking like a $5 date. And we would just sit in the back of the pickup truck and eat beignets and share one hot chocolate. And the more money we made and the more stuff that we had over the years, we did start like, you know, not doing those things regularly. Like, we would have date night, but we would allow it to get pushed to the side if something else come up. It was not like anyone was bitter in the moment. It was like, oh, you got to do that? Okay, well, cool. I guess I'll just work on this. Like, we'll find another day. But then weeks turn into months and you haven't had your consistent date night. And so since 2015, we've been really, really deliberate. We have a date night pretty much every Tuesday or Wednesday night. We learned very quickly that Friday and Saturdays, young people want to go out and do their thing. You cannot depend on them to babysit. So you have to pull your fun into the middle of the week. So, yeah. So like Tuesdays and Wednesdays, we're really deliberate about date night. And, you know, my husband works in entertainment now, and he works on a show. And the show was actually taping. The new schedule came out, and the show was taping on Tuesday nights, which would normally be our date night. And the thing that really got me, you guys, this is in August of this year. As soon as he got the tape schedule, he literally forwarded it to me. And then he called me and said, did you look at the email? And I said, no. And he's like, can you open it? So I open it. And maybe he had that email in his inbox for 15 minutes. And he immediately thought this conflicts with date night. So he renegotiated a new night, like right there on the spot. Mm-hmm. And I was like, dang, 4 or 5 years ago, no, wouldn't have happened. He'd have been like, And we would have just like let it go. But so deliberate. We've been using that to test out different restaurants and areas that we wouldn't normally go to. So we take turns finding things on Yelp or hear things that we've heard about. And we'll just go to a completely different area, have a nice dinner. Sometimes we go like to work out together. That's the other thing. We work out together 3 days a week at 6 o'clock in the morning. We go to boxing together. That's relatively new. That's been like since early summer. So we've been doing that about 5 or 6 months. Mm-hmm. But we're just constantly finding things for us to do together. And that has been, again, so fulfilling because when there is something that we have to do, like he is actually on a flight right now to New York to take something. And so we're not having date night tonight, but not this weekend, but the previous weekend, he took me on a little vacation to Newport Beach, three days. We hung out. We spent a lot of time together. We went to the spa and it was just beautiful. But he makes sure, we both make sure that we deposit.
Okay.
So that nobody feels depleted, you know, when there are those times when work has to make a withdrawal. And same thing for my daughter. Like, I've been so much more intentional about this time that I spend with her that when I do have to go speak or when I am going to work, if it's something that she can't come to, she's like, go get him, girlfriend. Like, this is truly like my little friend. Or when I come back, she's like, you sold all your books. You sold all your books. Did you come up with anything? She's also slash manager in this relationship. But they're so proud. And so by being more deliberate and intentional with them, it allows me to stand up and be great when I'm out. Like, I feel my most confident and bold self when I'm on stage, when I'm on TV, when I'm doing my stuff, because I know I got people that love me no matter what. So even if I fall right here, I'm still going home to a house full of love. So if you don't like me, that's fine. I can accept it. But I know that before I came, I was being nurtured and encouraged. And when I leave here, I'll be nurtured and encouraged. And for me, that matters so much more. I definitely love the feedback from my audience or from producers or from whoever, but nothing beats what my family thinks about me.
I love that. I think that that truly to me is redefining wealth. And I think that, right, Mandy, that's like such good feedback. I mean, well, because I want to figure out like what can we do more of? Because I do get the reason why people always ask, like, you know, how am I able or why have I grown so quickly? And it's not that I've grown quickly, but I saw the huge boost when I got with my husband. Because
wow.
I didn't realize, because in meanwhile, he's just a regular schmegular, you know, 9 to 5, just mm-hmm. a regular guy. And I remember he would always ask like, oh, you know, are you sure you don't want one of those, like, you know, whatever guys? I'm like, well, you know, I don't know what guys you mean, but you know that, but it's because there's such a solid foundation because mm. I am always someone's foundation, right? I am mm-hmm. big mama in my family. Like, you know, like everybody.
You're Wanda.
Me. Yeah. So I carry a lot, and I've never been with someone who there is that I could actually lean on confidently, except for my father. So mm-hmm. he set a good example of this is what it looks like to lean on someone financially, spiritually, just, you know, and so every guy that I dated, I became my father to them, which is true. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, it was like, I was the, I got you, lean on me. You know, and I didn't realize that I was turning every man into my child. I met my husband, and he was like, I don't know who you think you're raising, but fully grown.
And come on, Superman.
Exactly. You can actually lean on me. And I remember I was like, well, you know, I make a little bit more, so, you know, I can handle these bills. He was like, and they were paid before you got here, so I need you to take a seat, and I will handle the bill. It still blows my mind to this day, where I'm like, wow, you know? And so I can totally understand, and I'm wanting to lean more into, because we don't have a regular date night. I mean, like, we hang out when it's like, oh, but making that strategic time, I think that that is an amazing idea. I feel like we look forward to it.
Yeah. It's something for you to look forward to. And I'll tell you what, because it's not all peaches and roses and rainbows every day. You know, some days you'll be looking at these jokers like, you know what? Listen, you really trying my patience today. But the funny thing is, we get it together for date night. Like a couple weeks ago, I was not feeling him on a Wednesday morning. I'm not even gonna lie. I don't even remember what happened. You know, it could be anything. It doesn't even have to be major, but you're like, really? Like, you're just gonna keep smacking like that or whatever. It was something where I like gave him a look.
Smacking,
like, what was that for? Yeah, smacking, not cool. But it was like, I did something and he was like, what'd you look at me like that for? And I was like, I can look how I want to look. You know, I popped in, popped a little attitude. I don't even know what happened. The funny thing is, we still to this day don't know what really happened or how it started, but it was just one of those moments. But let me tell you, before he left that morning to go to work and I realized it was date night and I wanted to go to that restaurant, I was like, uh-uh, man, pull yourself together. Go apologize so you can have a good date night. Like, it really keeps us in check too, because we look forward to it. So I was like, if I did something to offend you, I apologize. He's like, oh, you didn't even want to apologize, but thank you for trying. Yeah, but we've been together 14 years. So these are 14, almost 15 years of shenanigans, married for 10. And it hasn't been easy, but it has been beautiful, because it's an opportunity, like you were talking about, Tiffany, like to have someone that you can lean on that just lets you be you, you know, too. Yeah. And he lets me be all of me. You know, I have my Patrice Washington, and then there's Patrice Cunningham. Mm-hmm. And Patrice Cunningham is from the hood. And she turns up every once in a while. And he likes both of them. Like, whoever pops out, he's like, I got it. I'm with you. Like, whatever, you know? He lets me be all of me. And I dated people in the past where it would be like, could you not? Or their mom is like, your dress is a little tight. And y'all know how I feel about my tight dresses. This is not new. This has been going on for decades. So I was like, so your mom's dressing me now, you know? But my husband has always let me be me. And he's always protected me, even from family members who thought that they could have a say in our relationship too, or in our marriage, or how we parent or whatever. He covers that. So, yeah.
Wow.
I still like him.
I feel like this has been awesome. Right, Mandy?
Yeah. Thanks so much for coming on. And definitely, I mean, this is a great teaser for your show. I feel like Redefining Wealth on iTunes. I'm assuming everywhere you can listen to podcasts, you can find Redefining Wealth.
Yep. And if you have a hard time, go to patricewashington.com. But thank you guys so much. I always enjoy chatting with you. I love that it's not, you know, some places you go and it's kind of stale, sterile.
Yes.
You kind of like just
like, what are your four tips for getting out of bed? You're like,
you'd be like, ugh.
How could it be stale when you're here?
Exactly. What are the things that someone can Google that you can share right now?
Essentially, that's exactly it, Tiffany. That's a good one. What are the things that people can Google that they've already Googled, that they've already heard 19 times? Yeah, so thank you guys for also letting me be me and allowing me to come back on and share about Redefining Wealth. I don't know what the next few years hold, but I am super excited to be in this space right now and doing everything that I'm doing. It feels like exactly where I'm supposed to be and exactly what I was called to do.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.